and Americans for the Arts.
This is an editorial statement from the Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation Board of Directors. The Equal Rights Amendment has been on the table for states' ratification since 1972. That is close to 50 years. A two-thirds ratification of the states, meaning 38 states, is required for passage. 37 have ratified the ERA, but Florida is not one of them. The amendment reads, quote, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Passage would ensure that all people, regardless of gender, are assured of no discrimination in terms of property, employment, divorce, and other such matters." Let's be proactive. Start contacting your elected Florida representatives and senators to vote yes on the concurrent ERA resolutions to ensure equality for all Americans.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Later, we'll hear about two demonstrations coming up this week, and we'll hear why supporters of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers will be demonstrating this evening outside a Temple Terrace Wendy's restaurant. We'll also hear from SDS, Students for a Democratic Society. They're rallying on Thursday to support increasing enrollment of Black students at USF. And you can join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663. You can email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Before we begin, I want to play comments that were left by listeners about my last show. I played a speech by attorney John Morgan about his campaign to add a $15 an hour minimum wage to Florida's Constitution. In addition to people commenting on that, we'll also hear from a caller who responded to a recent news story where a local worker was severely injured on the job by a saw.
Hi, Sean. This is Liz from Spring Hill, and I just got done listening to John Morgan say he's not a socialist early in his speech. And just to highlight how much people do not understand what democratic socialism is, leaving the markets for goods and services, but where we share needs, we do it more justfully. At the end, he talks to his wife, Ultima, that if they would give up all of their riches, if everybody in the world could own a three-bedroom house with air conditioning, she said yes, she would give up all of her money and riches to give everyone a three-bedroom house with air conditioning. Does that sound like a form of democratic socialism? Thanks for the great show.
My name is Esther. I live in Riverview. And I'm calling about the $15 an hour that Mr. Morgan wants. And I think that's a good idea, but it's, unfortunately, it's not a good idea for everyone. I live on a very small Social Security retiree check, and it's under $800 a month. Because all my working years, I work minimum wage, and part of the time I had to take care of a sick family member. So I don't have a lot of money. He may not think 50 cents more for a hamburger is a big deal, but it is for people like me. I don't know how it's going to affect other things like the cost of food and other items that you need, household items. I think it's what they should do is some way to lower the prices. That would make more sense. But Mr. Morgan should donate some money to this station to help out. I mean, he has all that money, and how dare him not help the station to stay on the air for people like me and other people. And I can't afford to donate, but I swear to God, if I ever got any money, I'd donate a big check to you people. It's very upsetting. He's talking about how he didn't have air conditioning for 3 years. I've been living in this mobile home with no air conditioning, but I had to learn how to adapt, and it's not easy, but I had to make a lot of sacrifices.
Sean, my name is Jeff. I come from up north where it's unionized laborers. And if that gentleman was using a partner saw and he was not certified on it and did not have the right blade, because those things will kick back at you, I mean, that's unconscionable. That's why folks down here should organize, because good people get maimed and killed every day on the job. And after 30 years in the business, I really hate hearing about that kind of crap. I do love your station. Thank you.
Well, those were listeners commenting about last week's show, which is on our website, WMNF.org/news. Later on in the broadcast, I'll give out the number for you to leave a voicemail about today's show. You can always listen to previous shows, comment on the stories on our website, or join us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WMNF News. And this is WMNF's Midpoint. It's 12:11 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. And before we begin, I want to thank the person who just made a donation to during the end of Rob's show. This is a $60 donation from John Roush from Bradenton. Says, I love Rob's radioactivity. I also enjoy listening to Executive Session and the classic rock shows on Saturday afternoon. So thank you to John for that donation. If you'd like to make a donation, you can go to WMNF.org. Well, we turn now to our first guest. Tampa Bay Students for a Democratic Society will demonstrate on Thursday afternoon to encourage the University of South Florida to increase its Black enrollment. Our guest from Tampa Bay SDS is Elizabeth Kramer. Welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint, Elizabeth.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. Well, what can you tell us about why you're demonstrating? For example, give people an idea of what is the Black enrollment at USF?
Well, currently we're looking at a 10.7% African-American population at the university, and we're talking about the main Tampa campus. If we're talking about the USF system overall, though, it's 10.1%. This is actually the lowest that it's been in the past 10 years, and yeah, we think that the university has an obligation, considering it is, you know, still mostly a commuter campus, to do everything it can to take in people from the community, you know, people who are actually living around USF, provide them with opportunities that they maybe wouldn't otherwise have.
Well, an argument could be, well, just people apply and then certain people get accepted or not. So maybe you can make an argument that the university might not have control over who applies. How do you think that would how do you think that the university could actually improve?
I think that, well, you know, that's actually an argument we hear pretty often, right? Well, what if people just aren't interested in applying to USF? We are not able to have those statistics because the university keeps those particular statistics like on lockdown. We are not allowed to touch that information. Unless we go through like a long, lengthy process of actually getting it. But considering how kind of new this campaign is, right, we want to increase Black enrollment on campus. We don't have access to those exact statistics, but we do know that because it's mainly a commuter campus, that people from the area are in fact applying to USF. It is a matter of choice that USF is not actually taking them in, though, you know, for whatever reason. A lot of people say, oh, well, what if they don't make the right grades? What if they don't do this? What if they don't do that? We're less interested in that question and more interested in how the university can take people, once again, from the community and give them opportunities to get an education. Maybe that's not something that they could do outside of USF. It's hard to move, you know, especially now that the price of universities, as far as doing the application process and, you know, actually applying for classes and getting your books, etc. It's a lot of money. And so moving on top of that is like a big deal. Plus there's out-of-state tuition and a whole bunch of other factors. So people in the area, right? Tampa, in particular, is 20.7%. That's 20.7% African-American. Temple Terrace is 26.2% African-American. Hillsborough County, broadly, is 17.8% African-American. Because we know those statistics, we know that, you know, the university doesn't at least match the kind of population, you know, that exists around it. So that's really what, you know, we're interested in, is getting people from the community into the university.
This isn't a new campaign for you. You've been looking at it for at least a few weeks now. Have you had any interaction with the university administrators, and what are they telling you?
Absolutely. We've actually had an event around this campaign already. We presented actually the university administrators, in particular, Dean McDonald. She's the dean of, I believe, student success, something along those lines. But she basically was like, oh, well, did you send this in an email? Oh, well, did you do this or that? She was very unenthused. She was very uninterested. And at the same time, there were a large group, well, I won't say large, there was maybe 10 Trump supporters and people who really did not want to see us out there advocating for increased Black enrollment, standing off to the side, saying very discouraging, nasty things to us. and other people that were walking by, and the administrators were letting it happen. They were standing by the side. In fact, they were joking with them and laughing, and we actually have pictures of that on the Tampa Bay SDS Facebook page.
So I want to get this straight. There were USF students there who were saying, don't increase black enrollment?
That's correct.
Okay. I wish I'd been there. I could have talked to some of them. That's an interesting position to take. Well, our guest is Tampa Bay SDS member Elizabeth Kramer, and we're talking about their campaign to increase the enrollment of African-American students at the University of South Florida. So you've been criticizing during this interview and in your previous protests the way the USF administration has handled this demand, as you're putting it. But have there been other universities that have handled this differently? The University of North Florida is something that I saw on your Facebook page that they've handled it differently. Why? What have they done?
Well, essentially, UNF SDS, that's University of North Florida Students for a Democratic Society, they actually waged a similar campaign, and they won. They had a couple events, but at one event in particular, there were some, and I'll say it frankly, white supremacist students who gathered around the chapter of SDS in the event and were, calling black people monkeys and making very racist remarks. And SDSers caught it on video, you know. So whenever they posted that online, it made the University of North Florida look really awful. So, you know, they were able to then use that pressure to get that demand met. And actually, UNF had the greatest African-American population or greatest population of African-American students coming into the university ever this past semester. So, you know, UNF SDS won this demand. It's something that can be done. And SDS at University of South Florida wants to do the same thing.
Did you get a handle on what the administration did differently at the University of North Florida? How did they do outreach, or how did it could have just been an accident, of course, that they just think the black enrollment increased. But it sounds to me from what you're describing is that the university administration took it upon themselves to increase this number, and then it increased. So do you have any idea of what they did?
Yeah, so really what happened, we shouldn't ever, as SDS, what we advocate for in general is not taken lightly by university administrators. Why? Because it means they're going to have to do more work to figure out these complicated social problems. It means that they're potentially going to have to spend more money in places that they don't want to. So whenever SDS was, having their events at UNF, they actually at one point stormed the administrators' offices because those demands weren't being met. You know, they weren't having access to what they needed or whatever. So whenever they went in, they stormed. They were able to win by putting pressure on the administration. Once again, in general, administrators don't take kindly to the kinds of demands that we have, what we want to see on campus. So I can talk in particular, though, about some of the specifics of what the university did after, though. So I don't know if that's what you want to hear.
Yeah, no, that's that would be very interesting, I think, to people that what were the specifics that the university did?
So they were basically able to, and something else that we are encountering is that our administration at USF wants to constantly talk about, well, how are you going to fix this problem? We're not, as SDS, getting paid to like figure out how to rearrange the university. That's literally the job of the administrators, right? We know that we want to see progressive change on campus and that we can work with administration to make that happen, right? So whenever UNF won, we have a sole demand, and that is increased black enrollment. UNF SDS did the same thing. And so, whenever they ended up winning, administration at UNF and SDS got together, and they were able to come up with plans together to, fix the issue, make things better for African American students. And that included increased financial aid, that included community programs where people in the education program at UNF were able to go out to primarily African American schools. And, we're able to start bringing in some of those high school students and get them interested in the University of North Florida and, facilitate that community-university relationship.
Well, our guest is is Elizabeth Kramer with Tampa Bay SDS, and we're talking about their demand to the University of South Florida to increase its Black enrollment. Black enrollment at USF is about 10.7% over the whole of all the campuses. And Elizabeth was telling us that it's 20 to 26% in the Tampa and Temple Terrace area, 17% in Hillsborough County. So you've also done some other campaigns recently, SDS, at University of South Florida, which apparently it seems like the activity level of SDS is increasing. It seems like this year is a more active year than it's been in the recent past, or maybe that's just my perception. But you've had a couple of other recent rallies. One was against USF's silence around sexual violence. Why would SDS need to have a rally against the university's silence around sexual violence?
Well, essentially, a police report came out. It comes out pretty often. I believe it's annually. And so whenever the report came out, there was a very small section on the amount of sexual assaults that have been reported on campus. And they have actually gone up every single year for the past 4 years. And, you know, USF has a history of kind of botching sexual assault cases. So, you know, for example, there's been a student in the past who actually had to go to her classes still with the person who sexually assaulted her, even though there was a court case around it, even though it was like a very big deal. In fact, administrators encouraged this student to drop, the case and to actually leave the school. And eventually she ended up doing that because she really didn't want to attend classes with the person who sexually assaulted her.
And another type of demonstration that you've had recently was a rally to defend LGBT job rights. What was that?
So Title VII, as a part of the Civil Rights Act, is actually under attack by the Trump administration. The Trump administration sent out some orders that said, like, we don't think that LGBT people should be covered, and that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans people, and any others, should be covered under the Civil Rights Act. And so that means that if, you know, it goes through and the Supreme Court is actually debating it, having their whole process right now around it, that if, you know, it happens that LGBT people will no longer be protected by Title VII, then employers could fire LGBT people at will for being LGBT. So, you know, in the same way that, like, people are protected from being fired because of their race or because they're a woman, people shouldn't be fired or shouldn't face any repercussions for wanting to move forward in their workplace or, ascend in their workplace, whatever terminology you want to use, that shouldn't be the case, that they're being attacked for that in particular. So,
well, let's turn back to Thursday's rally. What can you tell us about? So you're demonstrating to encourage the University of South Florida to increase its Black enrollment, and the rally is this Thursday on campus. When and where?
It's going to be happening at 12:10 p.m. at Cooper Hall on the University of South Florida campus, Tampa campus. So that's going to be happening at Cooper Hall. We're going to be out there for a while, giving speeches, chanting. There's a lot of potential depending on how many people come out, on what we can do. So.
Well, great. Thanks so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint Monday, Elizabeth.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Elizabeth Kramer is with Tampa Bay SDS. Their rally to encourage the University of South Florida to increase its Black enrollment will be this Thursday. It begins at 12:10 in the afternoon at the Cooper Hall intersection. Stay with us. After this quick music break, we'll hear why allies of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers will demonstrate this evening outside the Wendy's in Temple Terrace. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. You're listening to WMNF Tampa. It's 12:25 in the afternoon. We'll be right back. That's music from Bob Marley and the Wailers. Welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:27 in the afternoon, and you're listening to 88.5 FM or WMNF.org. You might also be listening on the WMNF app. We turn now to our next topic. This evening, there's a demonstration against Wendy's, and we'll find out why from our guest. Roger Butterfield is with Tampa Bay Fair Food. That's a local group of consumer allies of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint, Roger.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you came in. Well, your group and three other groups are sponsoring today's Boycott Wendy's Day of Action. And the three other groups, well, your group is Tampa Bay Fair Food. There's the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, the Alliance for Fair Food, and the Student Farm Worker Alliance. So why are you having a Boycott Wendy's Day of Action?
Well, this action is part of a larger series of campaigns that farm workers have called the Campaign for Fair Food. And it's been going on since 2001, had some extremely impressive victories against corporations as enormous as Taco Bell and Walmart and Whole Foods. And as of now, 14 of these corporations have come to the table and have signed agreements with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers to ensure better wages and working conditions for farm workers, freedom from sexual assault, freedom from want. And Wendy's is one of the only fast food companies to have not signed on to this program. And so in 2016, the coalition called for a boycott of Wendy's and has done numerous actions, and allies have taken action in support of this campaign to boycott Wendy's and to get them to sign on to this program.
So this starts with, it originates with the conditions in the field for farm workers in Florida and maybe in general solidarity with farm workers around the world. But describe what a typical day would be like for a farm worker, maybe in the tomato fields of Florida.
Sure. Well, typically a farm worker gets up, they have gone to sleep in extremely cramped housing that often charges you $300 or $400 a week. And so you're crammed into what's called sardine housing with, maybe 12 people, including your family in there. You wake up at 5 a.m. Maybe you take your kids to childcare or to school. And then you head out to a parking lot where buses come and pick you up and take you to these fields. And maybe it's been raining, so you actually can't start picking the tomatoes until maybe like 10 or 11. And you finally start picking these tomatoes and you fill up these 32-pound buckets. But if you're outside the program, the crew leaders will be shouting at you to fill the bucket more than it needs to be, to 36 ounces, which is a way of stealing your wages.
36 pounds.
Pounds, excuse me. 36 pounds, 32 pounds. And the coalition has been calling for, famously, the penny per pound. And this pound, basically these buckets are picked by the piece. So you're paid, I believe it was 45 cents for every 32-pound bucket. And after this campaign, the coalition has been able to get growers, and thanks to the premium that's passed down by these large companies, about 82 cents per bucket, an enormous wage increase. And so this daily life, for farm workers ends up with them making basically a pittance that, with the premium, at least, gets to a level that's more livable, more decent, and more dignified.
And one of the details that you put on early in that story is having to wait around till after the rain, and because the point there being, a lot of us are familiar with being paid by the hour, but these workers are paid, as you said, by the piece, which means if they pick no tomatoes, they get no pay, even if they've been there for hours waiting the rain out.
Absolutely. It's day labor. People might go out there and they they don't know if they're going to work that day. It's similar to early 20th century lining up outside the factory and saying, you come in. Oh, nope, no more workers. And, you might get there. The conditions might not be ripe for you actually picking, and you might not make any money that day. And often if if your wages are stolen or if there's no work or anything like that, farm workers aren't on payroll and, they don't have access to enforcement of minimum wage laws. that has all changed with the program, but that was the reality that most tomato farm workers were working in, and it's what exists outside the industry or the program.
And we may have mentioned it, but it's an important distinction to mention what happened before the Fair Food Program versus how the workers organized to get the Fair Food Program put in place and really fought for it. So what was that process like?
Well, I would describe the program as a tripartite or three-part agreement between the coalition, the buyers of tomatoes like Walmart and Taco Bell, and the growers. These are small names that, you know, most people probably aren't familiar with, but you might see the stickers in the store for things like Sunripe Brands or Lipman Tomatoes. And for years, the buyers were signing on like McDonald's and Taco Bell, but the growers were holding out. And when enough of the market was saying, look, we want you to abide by human rights standards, we want you to pay a higher wage, eventually the growers had to come to the table. And so in 2010, the Florida Tomato Growers Exchange, which represented 90% of Florida tomato growers, came to the table. And the day and night transition was extremely stark. It was people being pistol whipped in the fields, going from that, and, you know, just brutal sexual harassment. I believe 80% of farm worker women report sexual harassment in the workplace. It went from that to a state where a recent report of the program showed that there's only been one case of sexual harassment with physical contact since the program started in 2011. My numbers might be a little bit off, but I believe it's something like $26 million in extra wages has been paid out to 35,000 farm workers since this program started. And people finally feel like they have a voice, they can call a complaint line, and that complaint line, it's not like somebody, you know, just answers and maybe like a few weeks go by and you hear nothing. Somebody usually comes there within like the next day or the week to investigate the claims and to resolve them. And there's real enforcement mechanisms, and people, you know, who have sexually assaulted, for example, have been kicked out of not just their particular employer, but the entire program. And so they can't find work in that industry if they are an abuser.
Our guest is Roger Butterfield. He's with the Tampa Bay Fair Food. That's a local group of consumer allies of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. And they're holding a rally this evening from 5 until 6 outside the Wendy's in Temple Terrace. And we'll talk about the details of that in just a minute. But I wanted, if there's someone listening who would like to buy tomatoes that are part of the Fair Food Program, how do they find those tomatoes, and how do they know once they're at a store that would sell tomatoes like that, that these tomatoes are guaranteed to be fair food?
Sure. One important way is there's now a fair food label. And so if you are in Whole Foods, I believe is particularly good about having it, but you know, there's some other ones, even, you know, Walmart's and grocers that are signed on like Trader Joe's and Fresh Market. But they are guaranteed to buy from these farms, these Fair Food Program farms. They cannot buy outside of the program for Florida tomatoes.
When you go to a store like the ones you mentioned, are all the tomatoes there part of the Fair Food Program, or do they import some from other places?
Some are imported from Mexico, yeah. I believe Walmart in particular buys an enormous amount from Mexico as well.
So many fast food and grocery stores have joined, and you've mentioned them, and maybe, you know, I'm not asking you to mention them again, but there are holdouts. There are some places that for years and years, including Wendy's, but also some grocery stores that just have not joined the Fair Food Program. How have you been putting pressure on these stores or fast food places, and what's the response been?
Our big focus has been on Wendy's. Wendy's absolutely needs to sign. I will mention that for the past 10 years, Publix has refused to sign, and there's been major actions, including a 200-mile march to their headquarters that has not resulted in them coming to the table. And they've said some pretty, frankly, atrocious things, like if there are atrocities going on in the fields, it's none of our business. Wendy's in particular has been holding out for a long time and has said things like, well, we already have a set of standards that we abide, you know, our suppliers have to abide by, and they have to, you know, have these rigorous human rights standards and pay well and things like that. However, there's no enforcement mechanism, and anybody that knows the law or, you know, any sort of workplace policies knows that enforcement is the key to all of it. And if nobody's enforcing these and there's no oversight, it's essentially just words on paper. And after there was a 5-day fast last year in support of the campaign and calling on Wendy's to join, a Wendy's spokesperson said that there's nothing new here. CIW is just exploiting the messaging of the Me Too movement to service its ends, you know, something like that. And what's amazing to me about this is, first of all, farm workers have been talking about sexual violence in the fields for a long time, way before the Me Too movement. And as much as the Me Too movement also amplified the experiences and voices of women being harassed in Hollywood and in many other industries, to say that Me Too isn't about farm workers is frankly absurd when they're one of the most oppressed categories of workers.
Well, our guest is Roger Butterfield. He's with Tampa Bay Fair Food, and they're one of the four groups that are rallying this evening outside the Wendy's in Temple Terrace. And my name is Sean Canaan, and you're listening to WMNF Tampa. It's 12:38 in the afternoon. You may also be listening on WMNF.org. We're going to go to the emails in just a second, but I want to give out the phone number as well. If you have a question for Roger, the number here is 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Well, David emails in, can you speak to the situation for tomatoes purchased at the Tampa wholesale markets on Hillsborough Avenue in Tampa? So, Roger, do you know about that?
Unfortunately, I don't know anything about that in particular. And it's a little difficult to track those markets because they're smaller scale and the corporations that have signed on, you know, Walmart, they're just in a completely different weight class than those markets. I will say that since 90% of the industry has joined on, there is a stronger likelihood now more than ever. And to be clear, also, there are tomato fields outside of Florida now up the East Coast that have signed on. And so, yes, there is a greater likelihood, but there's no guarantee, unfortunately, because those, you know, companies have not signed on. And until we have 100% of the industry in Florida, there's not as much of a way to tell. However, if there's a sticker on the tomatoes, you can go to fairfoodprogram.org and check the, you know, brand name against the ones that are listed there, because they have a full listing of all the growers.
I was covering a CIW solidarity event in St. Petersburg more than 4.5 years ago. I looked this up this morning to make sure I had the date right. 4.5 years ago is when the Student Farm Worker Alliance announced that it was beginning a boycott of Wendy's. So that's a really long time. How does that compare to some of the longer holdouts? And the one I'm thinking about is one of the first that people might think about was the Taco Bell when CIW and its allies were first organizing against Taco Bell and having them join, and I think they eventually joined. How long did that campaign take?
That lasted from, I believe, April 1st, 2001, which was a day that the CIW opened up the campaign by awarding Taco Bell a Golden Bell of Human Rights as an April Fool's Day joke, to, I believe, mid-2005, so about 4 years. And so Wendy's has actually held out longer than Taco Bell at this point. And I believe, with the exception of Publix, it is the longest running campaign. They just beat out Chipotle, which signed in 2012.
Well, our guest is Roger Butterfield with the Tampa Bay Fair Food. Tell us about the rally tonight. Where is it? When is it? And what could people expect?
So it's at 5 p.m. And I apologize if I have this address wrong, but I believe it's 11720 North 56th Street in Temple Terrace. It'll be a picket for roughly an hour, and we'll be protesting in front of it and sending a delegation inside to speak with the manager and ask them to pass on you know, our demands and our asks to, you know, their manager, to their corporate managers.
And do you have another march coming up? Is it in the springtime when you go to a headquarters or something like that? Has that been announced yet? What will happen next year?
Well, yes, there's always a major action in the spring. And I'm not sure what the details are on that yet. I'm not sure if it's been designated, but there is a major mobilization happening on November 18th. And that's going to be in front of, I believe it's Treon Partners, which is a shareholding group. However, it's a shareholding group that owns, if not a majority stake, at the very least the largest stake in Wendy's, and is run by Nelson Peltz, who is also chairman of the board of Wendy's. And Peltz has unfortunately been extremely recalcitrant, you know, very intransigent against our demands, and has not tried not to budge an inch, basically. So November 18th, there will be this mobilization in front of their headquarters.
What state is that in?
Oh, sorry, that's in New York City.
Our guest is Roger Butterfield with Tampa Bay Fair Food. That's a local group that is supporting the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. And there are four organizations that are part of the Boycott Wendy's Day of Action today in Temple Terrace. That's the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, Alliance for Fair Food, and Student Farm Worker Alliance are the other three. So you're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. If you'd like to join this conversation, here's the number, 813-239-9663. You can text your question in to 813-433-0885, or you can email dj@wmnf.org. It's 12:43 in the afternoon. And what would you say today would be the biggest concern for people who are, for farm workers who are in the fields? They're part of the Fair Food Program, but what would still be the main concern that you would have for their welfare?
That's a good question, and I think it varies, but I think probably one of the biggest is simply poverty. Even with the fair food premium, farm workers still do not make nearly enough. Their labor is extremely undervalued, and I think there's a whole history there, going all the way back to slavery and to the very oppressive roots of agriculture. I would also say that, you know, the current political state and the state of the rights of immigrants in this country is extremely fraught, and there's, I think, something tantamount to segregation. You know, people keep immigrants out of sight and out of mind. They want them to pick their food and, you know, shut up and not have their rights. And so I think that the lack of access to medical care, to decent education, to decent housing, to, you know, simply the things that one needs to get through in life, and to the state of fear that, you know, surrounds all that. Those are the biggest issues.
Are most of the CIW, most of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers laborers, are they generally 12-month residents of Florida and workers in Florida, or do they migrate between states, or do they migrate back to a Central American country or wherever?
It's hard to say the exact numbers on this sort of stuff. It's very hard to track, but yes, all of those are the realities that people face. Some people stay year-round. Florida is known as one of the three gateway states for agricultural laborers. California, Texas are the other ones. And really, those three states make up the sort of entry points for people to migrate, you know, in other parts of the seasons to go pick watermelons or apples or any sort of produce. And then, yes, some people go back home, you know, to Guatemala or Haiti or Mexico. Yeah, those are the main places.
The tomato farmers, the laborers who pick tomatoes in and have organized as the CIW. Let's look at groups other than that for a second. There are a lot of laborers, a lot of farm workers in Florida who have not organized as tightly as the CIW have, and therefore have not won specific rights and specific limitations to, freedoms for their labor. What other kind of organizing is going on with those other workers?
Well, it's, you know, excuse me, there are limitations, unfortunately. Farm workers are excluded from the National Labor Relations Act, which is a very important piece of legislation that shaped how people would unionize and, you know, be able to assert their rights. There are important rights not only to collective bargaining, but also simply to things called unfair labor practices, where people can, you know, have the legal right to be protected or not be retaliated against, rather, for trying to improve their workplace conditions. And since those are absent for agricultural workers, the coalition has found a unique way out of this situation, but there's still so many unorganized workers, especially in the strawberry industry in particular. The industry is actually trying to automate its workforce instead of improving their labor conditions. And it's a very sad state of affairs. New York actually recently passed a law that would extend all federal rights of other workers to agricultural laborers. And it'd be amazing if something like that were to pass here.
What are some of the rights that normal workers have that agricultural workers don't have?
So key ones that I mentioned, you know, like unfair labor practices and the ability to address that, and also collective bargaining, but also things like overtime. Child labor is actually allowed in agriculture to an extent. You know, there's some nuances there, but there's also simply the de facto rights that people are denied. You know, things like minimum wage, there's a legal right to it, but not a on the ground right to it. There is always the threat of immigration and deportation and things like that. And there are also rights to freedom from discrimination. Again, this is a right that people ought to have or legally are supposed to have, and on the ground do not.
Well, I want to concentrate a little bit on the strawberry laborers right now for a second. I know that's not necessarily your expertise, but maybe you do know more about it than I'm giving you credit for. So what specific, it's a seasonal job, I believe, mostly in the winter and spring. What are some of the conditions of strawberry harvesting that the laborers have to deal with there that they might not deal with in other agricultural industries?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, it's seasonal, and so people might have to find other work, might have to move, things like that. I would say that it's also a very... It ages you quickly is the term I've heard. And it's a lot of stooping and bending. It's also, it's a job that is extremely, is made very individual. People do not work in crews and things like that. And so it's harder in those situations for people to have a sense of solidarity. And, you know, crops like lettuce, for example, was something that the UFW, the United Farm Workers in California, was able to organize very well because you had these tight-knit crews that don't really exist in the strawberry industry. Strawberry industry workers tend to actually be paid, you know, better than other groups. It's about, I think, average is actually around $15 an hour. But again, with agricultural work, it's day labor. It's hard to say when you get it. You don't always have a full 8-hour day. And so in general, farm workers, I believe, make around $11,000 per year per worker. And so in the strawberry industry, I don't believe it's any different. And I think it's also an aging workforce. So not a lot of younger workers want to come into it, which is, again, why the industry is trying to build machines that can actually pick strawberries.
What about exposure to pesticides? Is that something that strawberry workers would be concerned about?
I'm not sure in particular what the danger is in compared to other industries, but I do know that it is a danger. I mean, it's a danger in any industry. There's a film called Food Chains that came out about the coalition about 7 years ago. And, it, you know, this is tomatoes, but they were talking about working at a farm and feeling this cool breeze on their face. And they were like, oh, wow, this is, you know, nice. It's a very hot day. And they're blowing pesticides on the field next door and had no idea. The, you know, crew leaders didn't tell them anything about it. Things like that seem like they're very common.
And a lot of times when an agricultural worker has a real grievance with their employer, they're afraid to or they're completely unable to say anything because They know that their job will be terminated at the very least, and maybe they'll be deported. Maybe they will be abused, physically abused, or something like that. Have you been told about retaliation to workers who speak up about working conditions?
Yes, I know that the coalition has actually met with workers who have been fired for trying to speak up about conditions. A few years ago, we had a march in Lakeland, and some strawberry workers came to it, and they talked about how they would be working in the field, and not even, you know, 20 feet away, some of the crew leaders were doing target practice with rifles right next door. This isn't like going to a shooting range. This is you trying to work, and your boss is firing a gun right near your head.
Kind of transparent intimidation. It's possible that that's what that was.
Yeah, I can't see any other way to look at it.
All right, well, tell us again about the rally tonight. Where is it, when is it, and why are you doing this rally? Maybe start with the why for people who are just tuning in. My guest is Roger Butterfield. He is with the Tampa Bay Fair Food.
Sure. We're going to be protesting Wendy's so that they will join all of their competitors in the Fair Food program and sign on for better wages and working conditions for the laborers that work in our tomato system.
And the event is at 5 o'clock this evening.
That's right.
And it's at the Wendy's at 11720 North 56th Street in Temple Terrace. Now, if you're a worker at this Wendy's or a customer at this Wendy's, what kind of message would you like to communicate to them?
Well, for customers, I would say, you know, please side with farm workers by boycotting, by refusing to eat there, and by letting the company know that its policies right now, as they stand, are reprehensible and that they can be easily changed. If you're a worker there, I would only say that it is definitely not on you to change your company's policies, and I definitely respect the fact that people in that situation do not have the ability to speak out themselves, because, you know, workers everywhere need protections, need the ability to speak up. And unfortunately, as we've seen with Fight for 15 and other union efforts to improve conditions for fast food workers, unless you're acting together, you don't really have protected rights.
Besides coming out at this event this afternoon, if people want to find out more information, if they want to learn about the Coalition of Immokalee Workers or about the Fair Food Program, are there websites that people can go to?
Yes. So the first one is boycott-wendys.org. Another one is ciw-online.org. The first is for the Wendy's boycott itself. The second is for the coalition. I would also check out the fairfoodprogram.org. And then as far as local events that Tampa Bay Fair Food will be hosting, we have a Facebook page. We're trying to get on Instagram. And you can just search for us as Tampa Bay Fair Food.
Well, Roger, I want to thank you so much for coming on WMNF's Midpoint today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, thanks. I appreciate it. Roger Butterfield is with Tampa Bay Fair Food. That's a local group of consumer allies of the CIW, and they're rallying this evening from 5 until 6 outside the Wendy's. That's at 11720 North 56th Street in Temple Terrace, and there's a Facebook page that you can find information, a Facebook event page. Do you remember the title?
I believe it's called Boycott Wendy's Day of Action.
And you can find that there on the Facebook to find details about this action that's from 5 to 6 tonight. So thank you again, Roger Butterfield with Tampa Bay Fair Food. Well, I want to thank everyone who emailed today. And if you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts about the two topics we talked about today, you can call me at 813-238-8001 extension 114, and I'll play your message next show. And if you missed any of the show, you can go back and listen to it on our website later on. That's wmnf.org/news. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. And I want to thank our engineers Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. And I want to thank everyone who supported Midpoint Monday during our recently completed fundraiser. The show came up a little bit short of our goal, and so did the station. So we hope you can donate to help make up the gap. That's at WMNF.org. Stay tuned after the NPR headlines for Latino 54. Thanks for listening to Midpoint on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland.